Final hour of the show. Hope you are having a very good evening as we get ready to roll on right up until 7 o'clock. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. The one and only Scott Pollard will be in on the drive tomorrow with Dave and Katie.
Oh, man, I'm tuning in. Yeah, Scotty's in the house?
I may have to get up early for that.
A matter of fact, I may even call in to, you know.
Oh, you know what? That would be really good. You should call in.
That will be Country DD calling in. Hey, this is Country DD. I want to talk to Mr.
Did
Pollard.
Did you say DD?
DD.
Oh, I love DD.
Before I leave, Chris, you're going to have to give me the number to the bat phone so I get right through there, buddy.
All right. We're going to talk some NFL football. It's been a good show. If you're just joining us, Charles Davis, NFL on Fox, was on with us at 4. We talked with Rich Gannon from CBS. We had Dave Yeager, the coach of the Kings. And right now we have Ryan Wilson from CBSSports.com talking NFL. Ryan, it's Grant Napier and Doug Christie. How are you?
Good evening, fellas. How's it going?
Doing good. Why do you think that when the subject of top quarterbacks in the NFL come up, we never hear Alex Smith's name, and yet all he does, and again, I know we're talking regular season here, he wins, he doesn't turn the ball over, he's not throwing bad passes. Do you think he doesn't get the credit he deserves, or is it just going to take winning in the postseason to get that done?
You know, he doesn't get the credit, and that's been the case his entire career. I mean, if you remember, he came out in 2005 as the first overall pick, and the conversation that year was whether it's Alex Smith or Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers sat on the bench for 3 years and then skyrocketed to the Hall of Famer he is now, and Alex Smith, meanwhile, was toiling in San Francisco with a new coordinator every year and changing in the coaching regime. And it wasn't until Harbaugh got there that he sort of got Alex Smith right. And then, of course, Kaepernick came on the scene. And it wasn't until he ended up in Kansas City, Alex Smith did, that he sort of got right again. And I think Andy Reid deserves a lot of credit for that, but so does Alex Smith. And typically in that Andy Reid offense in the last few years, it's been a lot of dink and dunk and sort of captain check down jokes and game manager. But this year we've seen exactly what Alex Smith can do when he has a little more control of that offense and he has more playmakers around him. This year Kareem Hunt's obviously been a big part of what they've been able to do successfully on offense. And then we have Tariq Hill. In the past, he didn't have those players, and I think we're just sort of getting a glimpse, which is sort of funny to say now that he's 33, of the type of quarterback he can be when he has players around him and coaches who can sort of put him in the right scheme. That said, they do have to win. They can't just win games in September and October. You got to make things happen in January. And they've had some success in Kansas City with Andy Reid and Alex Smith, but not the type of success that has people saying, oh, Alex Smith is a legit quarterback. I will say this, though. He's in the final year of his deal. And if the Chiefs think that Mahomes is going to be the guy next year, Alex Smith is going to get paid a lot of money to go somewhere else in 2018.
Explain to me, because if you'd have started the season and you would have said Tom Brady might not do what he's going to do, Tom Brady has been absolutely fantastic. But explain to me about the Pats' defense, 32 points per game, third worst in yards per game at 457. This is a Bill Belichick defense, obviously Matt Patricia as well. What's happening with the defense in Foxborough?
Yeah, no one's bragging about Matt Patricia being a rocket scientist all of a sudden. the equations aren't working. In his defense, they have fixable problems in New England. It's not a matter of not having the athletes or the players that can make the plays they need to make. They're just not doing it. They're making stupid mistakes, sort of between the ear stuff that you can fix. Stephon Gilmore is a perfect example. You could go down, and it's not just to point him out, but the whole secondary is having communication issues, and some of that blame has to go to Devin McCourty, the safety, who's been there forever and who's a Pro Bowler. Mm-hmm. But Gilmore, they signed to a lot of money this offseason on the first day of free agency. He was the number one cornerback in Buffalo for a number of years. And, you know, the thought was, oh, my God, he's coming to New England. He's joining Malcolm Butler. And suddenly the Super Bowl team is a lot better. And just the communication issues has been one series after the next, sometimes one play after the next, and two or three plays that stand out in that Carolina game, and two of them ended up being touchdowns, where wide receivers were so wide open, they got lost in a sea of green. They were the only person you saw if you were watching on the television screen. And on one occasion, the Fozzie Whitaker touchdown, where he sort of came out of the backfield to his left, Ed Dixon, the tight end, who was 20 yards in front of him, they both had the entire left side of the field to themselves because four or five defensive backs ran to the wrong side of the field to cover Christian McCaffrey. So these are the type of things that I'm sure that Belichick and Patricia are screaming during the course of the week about what they have to do, and for some reason it's just not getting done. The good news is, as you point out, Tom Brady is still Tom Brady. They have Gronkowski. The offense is still potent and can put up points. And I imagine once they get the defense, once they get the defense straight, they'll be another team that we shouldn't have sold short so soon. And I imagine on Thursday in Tampa Bay, we'll see the Patriots team we're used to seeing. We're not. It's not very often they come out and lay two eggs two games in a row.
We're talking with Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com. You can follow him on Twitter at @RyanWilson_07. Boy, a team that really looks night and day from a year ago, and Sean McVay and the Rams and Jared Goff, and you just give me your overall thoughts on this team. Are they as good as their 3-1 record would indicate?
Well, it's the first month of the season, and we'll look back in December and sort of laugh at some of the things we're talking about at this point, but it's hard not to take the Rams seriously right now, especially after all the things that it looks like Jeff Fisher wasn't doing with pretty much the same players. And I think a lot of credit does go to Sean McVay, not only because of what he's been able to do with Jared Goff, who struggled last year as a rookie, and not all that's on Fisher. Rookies in general struggle, especially quarterbacks. But how Todd Gurley has sort of come out of his shell and looked like a guy who was worth the 10th overall pick, because a lot of people, myself included, thought he was drafted too high simply because he was a running back, and he's playing like one of the best players in football right now. We know about the defense being very good, and Wade Phillips is the new defensive coordinator. He certainly has a lot to do with that. But I think in the post game, in the locker room after the game, the Rams let us in there, and we saw McVay give an impassioned speech, and he's one of the youngest guys in that room, and those guys bought in. And not only that, he praised the job that Phillips had done in front of all the team, and everyone bought into that, and I think that's a big part of it. Now, certainly winning helps you buy into things, whether the guy giving the message is young or old, but you get the sense they trust McVay based on what he's done, not just in this 3-1 start, but in the weeks and months leading up to this point. And if you have the trust of your team and your quarterback in particular, I think you can win a lot of football games. And McVay is looking like a front runner for Coach of the Year. And my number two right there behind him is Todd Bowles for what he's done with the Jets.
It's unbelievable. Is this an indictment on Jeff Fisher, or is the personnel too different to, you know, again, it was a disaster with him last year and everything else, and it was not like that he had, you know, great years leading up to that. What are your thoughts on that when people look at Jeff Fisher's legacy?
I think it is an indictment, and not to pile on Jeff Fisher, but it, not that many players have changed. And you have to wonder, or you don't have to wonder, we watched it week in and week out. It seemed like that team had given up on him. And when you're giving up 50 points a game and it looks like your team isn't prepared and you're making curious decisions with how you're using your offensive players, including your quarterback, and this just doesn't go to 2016. It goes well beyond that. He didn't have a winning record in St. Louis / Los Angeles, but you have to go back to his days in Tennessee before they were actually above 500 team and made the playoffs. And sometimes you just need a break and start over, and maybe that's what Fisher needs. But I think there's certainly plenty of blame that he deserves to shoulder, because that's where the buck stops. It stops with him.
We're talking NFL football. Grant Napier along with Doug Christie. Doug?
Ryan, when you look at the Atlanta Falcons, could have lost in week one, put a spanking on Green Bay, and then the same with the Lions. They could have lost, and now they beat the Bills. Is this an Atlanta Falcons team that which way do you look at them? Do you look at them as 3-1? Because I know in the NFL it's just win, and they've done that. But are they better than their record or worse than their record, in your opinion?
I don't think they're better than a 3-1 team. And as you point out, they could have lost a few of those games. In their defense, the Bills actually, turns out, funny story, they're a pretty good football team. Another team with a first-year coach who's a young guy. I think the issues in Atlanta, again, sort of like last year, start with the defense. They made a concerted effort to get better on defense, and it hasn't really bared out at this point, but it's early. Again, we're a month into this thing. So they need to shore up the defense and figure things out there, and I think that's the starting point. Could they be 1-3? Absolutely. But the good news is they have Matt Ryan, they have Julio Jones, who shouldn't miss a game. They're off this week, and they have Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman. So there are a lot of things to be happy about. They know how to win football games. I'm not buying into the sort of Super Bowl hangover thing in terms of the way they played. The record certainly doesn't reflect that. But I think that they need to get the defense shored up. It's a young unit, so there's time for that. But at the end of the day, once they get that sorted out, I think the rest will take care of itself, especially with that high-powered offense.
You know, Doug and I have been talking a lot about this week's game in Oakland, and obviously no Derek Carr. The Ravens have just looked atrocious the last 2 weeks. But Doug and I were saying, man, if this Raiders team loses this week, I wonder if that's just the beginning of the roof falling in on this team this year.
You know what? I was such a huge on that bandwagon, the Raiders bandwagon, this summer. And then a colleague of mine, John Breach, wrote something in August that caught my attention. And the Raiders travel more than any other team in the league. They travel more than 32,000 miles. By contrast, the Steelers travel the least amount of 6,000 miles. So that gives you some idea of the disparity.
Sure.
Teams that travel more than 2,000 miles per trip win like 38% of the time. So that could go a long way in explaining what happened in Washington a few weeks ago with the Raiders. Obviously, Denver isn't 2,000 miles from Oakland, but Denver's a very good team, and they lost Derek Carr. Now, they're at home against the Ravens, and there's no excuse. You could bring Jamarcus Russell out there, and you better beat that Ravens team. So there's no excuse to losing that game, especially, as you point out, people are going to get awfully nervous. A lot of fingers are going to start to get pointed. Marshawn Lynch hasn't gotten going yet. That defense, which is young and explosive and fast and physical, they've been making a ton of mistakes. So they have to get a lot right. But I think you could weather the storm for at least this week without Derek Carr, because the Ravens can't score points unless it's defensively. So if E.J. Manuel can take care of the ball, maybe Lynch can get going, and Amari Cooper can catch some passes, you should be okay. Because the Ravens, there's no way they can beat you unless Justin Tucker kicks 15 field goals and Eric Weddle scores a couple of pick sixes.
Boy, that travel notice, that jumps out at you, doesn't it? That's wild.
And here's the thing. Like, coaches are great at game planning against players and schemes and teams. There's no real playbook for how do you deal with prepare your team for traveling across the country four times when the other teams travel half that at most. So, I mean, that's something that I would be complaining about if I were Jack Del Rio, not publicly, but I would let the NFL offices know about that. And this is something that John Harbaugh has actually looked into when the team travels to London for in the Ravens case. But clearly that didn't work. They got smoked by the Jaguars a few weeks ago and got 44 points.
Well, Ryan, in the NFC South, obviously the Falcons, people are real high on the Buccaneers. But the Panthers go into Foxborough and get a W. They're now 3-1. They beat the Bills, albeit 9-3. Is this a team that maybe turning the corner back a couple years or getting a little ahead of ourselves with the 3-1 record?
Yeah, and I'll add one other thing. I'm shocked that they were able to do that and score like that without Greg Olsen. I didn't think they were going to be able to do that.
And part of the issue, I think, coming into the season was how was Cam Newton's shoulder going to be, because he had off-season shoulder surgery.
Right.
He looked sort of sloppy in the first few weeks of the season. He was much sharper against the Patriots. You can argue that the Patriots weren't covering people, so that probably helped, but you play whoever's on the field there. And I think, if anything else, it gave them a confidence boost. After the game, Cam actually called up the media for saying, for doubting them. But I think it's okay to doubt them. But at 3-1, that's certainly a better situation than they were last year, when I think they ended up going 5-11 or something.
Yeah.
So, it's a positive sign, and they're in a division that's obviously pretty tough, because you're talking about that. We just talked about the Falcons. The Buccaneers are sort of a fun team to watch, and the Saints are sort of hanging around there. But I think the Panthers have the defense, and if the offense can come together and they can get Samuel, who they drafted in the second round, and McCaffrey, who they drafted in the first round, more involved, maybe that makes up for the loss of Olsen. You have Kelvin Benjamin and Devin Funchess, of course. But if they can find a way for that offense to get going, and that starts with Cam, then I think we got something there, and I like him as good as anybody in that division.
We are talking NFL football right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. We've talked a lot about the surprise teams. Would the Giants be the most disappointing team in the NFL through 4 weeks?
Oh, my gosh. I think Ben McAdoo needs to spend less time on his hair and more time figuring out exactly how to protect Eli Manning, because I have no idea what the plan is there. And for as much as McAdoo likes to yell at the best player on that team and Odell Beckham, I think they need to focus more on devising a game plan that can win a football game. Is part of the problem Eli Manning? Maybe. He's not the player he was 6 or 7 years ago. He's 36, I think, at this point.
Yeah, but the last 2 weeks he's played very, very well. It's the defense that's lost him the last two games.
Which is funny, because the defense was sort of the thing that they could pin their hat on going into the season, and the defense played relatively well the first 2 weeks, and what happened is they ended up on the field for 100 plays per game, and they just ran out of gas. So it's a matter of getting both offensive defense on the same page at the same time. and protecting Eli Manning and maybe getting something going. But I mean, how many times does a team that starts 0-4 make the playoff, especially in the division with three really good teams in front of them? So I don't know, at this one game at a time, I suppose, is the cliche you go with if you're McAdoo. But they got to have a lot go right to even get back to 500 at this point.
Not only that, they got they still have to play Denver. They have to play Kansas City. They have the AFC West. They have to play the Raiders. I don't see any way in the world that happens with that team.
I agree. I think if they win six games, I think it would be a miracle.
Yeah.
Chuck Pagano has something on his hands and Andrew Luck, shoulder-wise. What do you see there, and how would, in your mind, how would you bring him along coming back from what he came back? I understand that he's going to start practicing this week.
You don't want to rush it, and, you know, that's the exact thing you feel like you need to do when you start 1-3.
Mm-hmm.
But they could have won two of those games that they lost. Well, a game and a half. They were leading at halftime in Seattle. They weren't going to win that game the way things ended there. But they had a chance to beat the Cardinals, and that didn't work out. So maybe they're 2-2, and you feel a little better. But they're 1-3, and, you know, it is what it is. But you cannot rush Andrew Luck back. They did that a few years ago, and it didn't go well for either Luck or the team. So you need him healthy. The sort of silver lining is that Jacoby Brissett showed glimpses of what he's capable of. He's only been there a month.
Right.
So Scott Tolzien clearly wasn't the answer, and that's okay. It's okay to be a backup in the NFL. But I think with Brissett, with some time, can certainly get better and make better decisions. But he needs some help around him. The offensive line's sort of been decimated by injuries, and that's a concern, not only for Brissett, but when Luck does get back out there, you have to keep him upright. So there was some conversation 2 weeks ago about just pulling the plug on Luck's season, and you know the Colts said they're absolutely not doing that, and I don't think you do that. You don't give up on the season if he can come back, even if it's not until 8 weeks in. You still have eight games left, but I think you just roll with Brissett, hope he keeps getting better every week, and it looks like he can do that, and then just hope they can make enough plays to win some football games. They've been close, and I think they're getting better, so they just have to start winning and hang on as much as they can until Luck gets back out there.
Final thing for Ryan Wilson from CBSSports.com, and that's Dallas. We saw the impact of not having Sean Lee on the field. I mean, that defense was horrible against the Rams, and then offensively somewhat inconsistent through the first 4 weeks, two up and two down. Do you still look at Dallas? When I say still, I'm assuming you thought they were going to be a playoff team this year, and if not, then you can. But do you still look at them as that team?
Yeah, no, I thought they were going to win that division. People were confused by the division going in, and I felt really comfortable with Dak Prescott. I said there's not going to be a sophomore slump here, given how he played not only last season, but in the preseason he didn't even look nervous when Romo first went down. He's been okay. He's been B minus, and that should be good enough to win. We saw what Zeke Elliott did in Denver when he was just sort of being lazy out there, and the interceptions came back and played well the next game. But the defense, as was the case last year, that's what sort of bit them down the stretch. The defense hasn't played well without Sean Lee. That's only one game, so we have to see where that goes. But they've had injuries elsewhere on that side of the ball. But when you have the offensive firepower they do have, you think that you can overcome it. We're not talking about the Patriots defense here. So
right.
They need to be more consistent. Prescott would probably admit that he needs to be more consistent. But, you know, we'll give it one more month and we'll see where they're at, because a lot of things can get sorted out in the next four games here. But right now the Eagles are leading 3-1. I wouldn't be surprised if Dallas or Washington makes a move here. Both teams have played well in spurts. But I feel okay with Dallas where they are right now. We'll see what happens. I think Prescott will continue to play. He'll continue to get better, and we'll see some of what we saw last year with him.
Going to be a fun game with Green Bay coming up, huh?
Oh, yeah. That will be very interesting. I think it'll be a battle of offenses, because the defense is – Packers defense playing a little better, but they still have holes that can be exploited.
Hey, great stuff. We really enjoy the conversation. Thank you very much for joining us, Ryan.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Yep, you do the same. Ryan Wilson joining us right here. And good segment. Gets us closer to the bottom of the hour. Update, the Yankees get a home run from Brett Gardner, and they have the lead. This game's going to last a long time. It's only in the top of the third. It started at 5:05. We'll come right back. This is Sports 1140 KHDK. And Doug Christie back with you.
Yes, sir.
Taking you up to 7. The game is now tied 4-4. 9:30 at the moment in New York. Fans better be prepared that they're not going anywhere until after midnight, I don't think.
No doubt. And
right?
You mentioned Sanchez's inability, Grant. I've watched him drop a couple balls already. It hasn't come to bite the Yanks, but they got to be careful with people on base.
Well, he's got a run over third now. And, you know, again, he's been a liability for the Yanks all year.
Yeah, he's going to have to make sure. Now that they've put someone at third, it really comes into play.
All right, again, if you want to get in, we are with you until 7. So we will take phone calls at 339-1140. That's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We've talked a lot of Kings basketball. You know, we get back to something Dave Yeager talked about, and that is he's playing all the young guys on Friday against the Spurs. So the vets, you know, when I mean the vets, you know, the Randolph, Carter, those guys. And I think that's good for the young players. Let's see what they do.
I kind of thought that he might do that, get them, just get the veterans a little taste, because they already know what to do, how to do it. And now there's so many young players. I mean, we haven't even talked about Malachi Richardson, who he didn't look – I mean, he was okay. I think he needs more playing time to start to figure things out. We talked about Scal. We talked about Papayannis. There are so many young guys that you're really going to have to get them out there and let them kind of play their way and find out who's who and what is what. And we didn't even mention Buddy Hield either. I mean, boy, oh, boy, the Kings have a plethora, especially at that 2/3 position. So finding time for these young players is what Coach Yeager is going to have to do.
I wonder, you know, again, it's not an issue now, but as we get into the season, you know, let's say we turn the calendar and it's now December 1st. It'll be very interesting to see what the rotation is like then and who's getting the minutes here and there. That's you know, again, things change because of injuries, but that's something at the two guard that I think is going to be fun to watch all year.
Yeah, I think they're going to push each other and practice constantly. And I think some of it's going to depend on how guys respond. Some guys can play off the bench. Some guys can't play off the bench, Grant. Once they get warm, you need to push them out there and let them go. Can some of the young guys you know, maybe start the game, and then you have what Coach Yeager has the ability to come in with some veterans, or do you come in with speed and size and the ability to have all these different options? I think speaks volumes to Coach Yeager's ability to kind of tinker with things. But you mentioned it, Grant, by December, we could start one way and see something totally different by Christmas. So it's going to be interesting.
All right. Again, the Kings and the Spurs coming up on Friday. Hard to believe that tomorrow the NHL season begins, Doug.
Man, you know what? Let's go Maple Leafs. I know that you're going Rangers. It's going to be interesting to see what Nashville does after an incredible run to the Stanley Cup, but came up short. Pittsburgh, can they go back-to-back? There are so many different storylines. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And then, once again, we always talk about the Washington Capitals. Are they going to have another breakdown, meltdown in the postseason after winning the President's Trophy, which goes to the team with the most points during the regular season in the NHL? They're really good. They're really good in the regular season, and they're really bad in the postseason.
You know, at some point, Ovechkin is going to have to ring the bell. And if he doesn't, you mentioned it last year, at what point do they not maybe move him while you can still get a lot of pieces, whether that's draft picks or you make a move that puts him on a really good team? And instead of, maybe being the first option, Grant, maybe he's the second or third option, and that allows him maybe to free up and do the things that we see him do during the regular season.
I don't see them winning a cup with OV. I just don't see it. I really don't.
Man, you're just
and he's also
Debbie
threatening.
Downer.
He's also telling them that he is going to play for Team Russia in the Olympics and leave the team for 3 weeks, which, again, he said that, but I don't believe that. I don't think you can do that to your teammates.
3 weeks. That's
It would be roughly 3 weeks, and a half weeks.
About, because I can speak to NBA, but about how many games is that in the NHL? 3 weeks, roughly. So you're about almost a month.
Roughly 9 games.
Okay. That's still a lot.
Yeah,
it's
almost, you know, 1/10 of the season.
1/10 of a season, yeah.
It's 9 to 10 games.
He's threatening, huh?
He said that in the offseason. He said in the summer. He and a lot of other players are really upset that the NHL is not participating in the Winter Olympics.
Man, that is
Because you have to stop the season.
Yeah, but you know who does that? Is it women's basketball does that?
Yeah, but I mean,
I know, but I'm just saying they do that. What's your take on that one?
My take on it is I've got mixed feelings about it. I understand the owners of the NHL and the general managers where they – it's an interruption to the rhythm of their season, and it also is a – you know, a risk of players getting injured. And
but Olympic hockey is huge.
Oh, it's gigantic.
It's not like just some random thing.
No, I know. And again, you know, where are the Olympics held? You know, the fact that it's over in Asia this year. Well, you know, now we're talking about halfway around the world. Yeah. You know, it's not just, you know, there are a lot of factors that go into it.
Is there any way that...
And here's the other issue.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you take the pie, take 100%.
Okay.
The vast majority of your hockey players aren't playing in the Olympics. So what are they doing? You know,
during that time,
right?
That
you know
that's
what I mean?
A good point.
So they're it's not just the guys that are playing; it's the guys that aren't playing. You know, like what do you do?
Yeah, you make a good point. I would. That's going to be interesting to see the owner's stance on that. I mean, because if you get a multiple players, that's going to be different. If you just got one or two, you know, do you fine them, Grant? How do you do that, man? I mean, because this is you're going for a Stanley Cup, which is absolutely huge at the same time. But Olympic hockey isn't just some little thing. It's big time stuff.
I've heard this from certain players. In my opinion, I do not think that they will follow through. In other words, I don't think you can do that to your teammates. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it would be tough to be like, look, this is my personal thing, and I'm going to go for a month, in essence. And I'll see you guys when I get back. Hope you can hold down. And you know what? He is, you know, whatever you want to say about Ovechkin, he's studly.
And I will say this. You know, he did have a change of heart a couple of weeks ago.
You know,
when OV came out and said he would skip the Olympics. But then I read something the other day where he was going back and forth. But he did, you know, again, to his credit, 2 weeks ago, he did release a statement.
Okay.
All right. That he has to accept that the Olympics won't be for him.
Wow.
All right? Because, in you know, again, all summer he said he's going to play in the Olympics. He's going to play in the Olympics. And he says he came out with a statement, I love the Capitals and my teammates here as much as I love my country, and I know all the other NHL players feel the same for their teams. We should not have to be in position to make this choice.
Yeah, that's a tough one because Russia, Canada, there's a lot of countries, Grant, where hockey is king, and they take it very seriously. So, that's tough. But, you know, good for him. He understands.
Yeah, he's basically came out with a statement and said, hey, and I'll read part of it. He goes, this is not just about me, but all the NHL players who want to play and have a chance to win gold for the country. Our countries are now not allowed to ask us to play in the Olympics.
Yeah.
How about that? They're not allowed to ask them to play in the Olympics. He said, me, my teammates, and all players who want to go all lose.
You know, because the NHL helps hockey in those countries because you get to see a guy like Ovechkin
Absolutely.
For the kids that brings it up. So it has to be a good relationship, and it sounds like they're taking care of it.
Hey, Mrs. Napier, Didi's up with a runner on second and no out. You better be watching the game or else I'm canceling a trip to the Netherlands. Let's get to Stan. Hello, Stan. How are you?
How you guys doing this evening, man?
Doing good.
To talk
What's
to
up?
You guys. Doug, Dougie Fresh, what's good?
It's all good,
Grant,
Stan.
Bow down, man. How you guys doing tonight?
We're doing great, Stan. What can we do for you?
Look, man, I just wanted to call and tell you guys, man, I'm born and raised on the south side of Chicago. I called a little earlier this summer. We're talking about Derrick Rose before he got signed.
Yeah.
Doug might have remembered the call, man. But I'm here in the Valley. Kings played last night, man, and you know, me being a forever Bulls fan, I'm not going to lie. Once they got rid of my boy Derrick, I kind of just been floating around. You know what I'm saying? I'm down with Cleveland this year. But, hey, man, the Kings are like something I could get behind.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about.
I like the youngsters in the game, man. I like their ball movement, and I think the future looks real bright, gentlemen. And I just want to tell you guys, man, I congratulate you, Doug and Grant, especially for being patient with this team. The excitement, all that's going to pay off for you guys, man. And, you know, like I said, I'm down with Cleveland this year because I'm like D-Rose. I'm happy he might at least get to play in the finals, man. But
he's not going
to
play in the finals. He's not going to play in the finals. He's not playing in the finals. Come on,
like I said, I just want to shout out, once again, our oncology unit, man, at Sac Sutter Children's Hospital. My son Hunter, man, is in remission. He's going to actually get to play
ball. Man, that's awesome.
At Johansson High School in Modesto.
Awesome.
And I just want to tell everybody over there at that hospital, man, I appreciate it. And I got blessings for him. And I love you guys because you guys kept me through a lot of that. You don't even know it, but you guys
that's
did,
great.
Man. I just thank you guys for that, and I appreciate it. And y'all have a good evening, man.
Hey, Stan,
appreciate you, Stan.
The best thing we've heard in a long time.
No
that's
doubt.
That's awesome, man.
That is. And, Stan, if you're still listening, I expect to see a picture of you in a Kings hat, man. Post it on Instagram, buddy. But God bless you and your family, man. That's great stuff.
Yeah, it really is. All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Final segment when we come back. Grant Napier and Doug Christie wrapping it up here on what has been an action-packed Tuesday.
Yes, sir.
We're going to do it all over again tomorrow. And then Thursday, we've got a little Thursday Night Football, Doug. You ready for some Patriots and the Buccaneers? That's going to be an interesting game, Doug.
It absolutely is. And we just had Ryan Wilson on talking about the fact that he doesn't think that the Patriots will lose two games in a row, even though they're traveling down to
I agree with
Tampa
him.
Bay.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
I think the Patriots are going to score a ton of points. If they can block Gerald McCoy, they'll score a lot. And I've watched Winston take every snap this year. He's just still prone to making too many mistakes. And again, I'm not I like a lot of things about Jameis Winston, but he tries to make plays that aren't there still. And that's my only knock on him. He's not yet, like, the term I'll use is take your medicine.
Right, sometimes.
Okay? I don't think he takes his medicine.
Yeah, instead of throwing it up.
It's like a golf. If you hit the ball, Doug, off the fairway, and you're like, I think I can hit it onto the green from here, but I'm going to have to hit an absolutely perfect shot, or you can just knock it out sideways and give yourself a chance. It's like the analogy in golf. Jameis Winston, to me, Doug, he doesn't know when to back off. And I think if he can get over, because he's got tremendous receivers, if he can get over that. But I do think getting Doug Martin back now after his suspension for, this should bode well for them.
It does because, granted, it opens up play action in a big way with those receivers. You got deep threats. You got across the middle threats. You got a tight end that you drafted. He's got all the weapons. You're right. It can't be perfect, and that's what he continues to try to do. On top of the fact, you golfed with me before. You just took a shot at me. You've seen me do that before. You've seen me do that.
The ball off the fairway. Seen you do that. As far as Martin goes, the one thing is you got to remember when you have these league imposed suspensions, mm-hmm. you can't be in the team facility. You can't practice with the team. I wonder how many carries he's going to be able to get because he hasn't been playing any football and he's not in football shape. It's a lot different than working out on your own.
Yeah, I read that. I read that in the story. And he was able to do all the preseason workouts with those guys. So he got that part of it. So as far as the playbook, all of that stuff, the nuances, I think he gets that. But you make a valuable point, Grant. The ability to come out. And, if we need you to carry 25 times tonight, he's not going to be able to do that. So from that standpoint, how much will he be able to give them? I don't know. That'll be interesting to see.
All right. The Yankees game is 5-4 New York, bottom of the third. The game is almost 2 hours old. So how about that for you?
It'll be on when we get home is what you're saying.
It might be on when we get up in the morning.
Yeah, this is going to be a long one. But for baseball junkies, for guys who like playoff baseball, and to me, playoff baseball is the absolute best because every pitch, everything means so much. You mess up one time, which we've already seen in the first inning. One bad pitch, and boy, oh boy, it's a different
That's
ballgame.
Right. One bad pitch. You're exactly right. So if you didn't hear, the Twins scored three runs in the top of the first. Luis Severino only went a third of an inning. Not three innings, a third of an inning. And then the Yankees get a three-run poke in the bottom of the first with one out by Didi Gregorius. And now the Yankees have gone ahead in the bottom of the third. It's 5-4. Runners on first and second as Jacoby Ellsbury is up.
Grant, you've said it so many times. Baseball, especially in the postseason, depends on your pitching, and no game could be more of an example than this because it's going to come down to each other's bullpens. Who's going to pitch the best tonight? And some people are going to come up with some big hits. It's going to be a good one to watch, my friend.
All right. We will be back tomorrow at 3. Go back to Boston, Ellsbury. We don't want you here anyway. Go back to Boston. Pop up with – get out of here. For Doug Christie, I'm Grant Napier. So long, everybody.